Well, now we came to verse 11. No foot of, we're dealing with the last part of the verse 11. No foot of man shall pass through it, nor foot of beast shall pass through it. Neither shall it be inhabited 40 years. 40 years. Now, we saw last week that the word inhabited frequently, like the word pass through it and similar words, have to do with the habitation of true believers within it. It will not be inhabited by anybody who is a true believer. And it will not be inhabited for 40 years. And remember why God is using the term 40 years? We began to teach that in our last study. The 40 years are reminiscent of the 40 years that Israel was in the wilderness. And the Bible showed us, like we looked at Deuteronomy chapter 8, where the Bible showed us that that 40 years was a time of testing. A time of testing. And the Great Tribulation, that is the major nature of the Great Tribulation. It's a time of testing. At first I thought it was a time of testing in order to separate the wheat from the tares, and certainly it that is the reason for it, but that it was just the fact that we're at the end of the church age. But by this time we know that it's a time of testing in from many, many departments in the Bible. The end of the church age. What are you doing with the Bible? Do you believe that every word came from the mouth of God? Do you understand more accurately God's judgment plan? I do, and there is doctrine after doctrine that has been flowing out during these last months. Doctrine after doctrine. And everyone is a severe test. And there are those who have been willing to acknowledge, yeah, it's the end of the church age, although I can get a little bit cynical, because a lot of people welcome that. They never liked the church anyway. They wanted to be independent, and now, glory be, we've got a biblical basis for being independent. But once they got out, it didn't mean that they were ready to buy all the other tests. Or face all the other tests and agree with the Bible. They had strong opinions about these things, and that still is going on to today. But this is why this chapter is speaking about a 40-year period of waste and desolation. The churches are desolate and waste today, because if you don't have a salvation program, what do you have? What do you have? You have nothing. You have nothing. In fact, it's worse than nothing, because they have substituted their own kind of a gospel that is absolutely false and is just tying people, locking people in stronger than ever into a path. And so he goes on in verse 12, I will make the land of Egypt, that is all the churches, desolate in the midst of the countries that are desolate. Well, the whole world is desolate. Until the end of 2300 days, when God began the 6100 day period, there wasn't even anywhere in the world there was virtually no one becoming saved. But then later on, God said, for the sake of the elect, I will shorten those days. And so they were not shortened in the churches. That desolation continues right to the end of the Great Tribulation. But out in the world, they were shortened in order to enable a great multitude, which no man can number, who were the elect, still elect, that they might become saved. And so we read in verse 12, and her cities among the cities that are laid waste shall be desolate 40 years, and I will scatter the Egyptians among the nations and will disperse them through the countries. Now, what's he talking about there? I will scatter them through the countries. Well, where did at the end of the 2300 day period, when God began to save again outside of the churches, who are these people that he began to save again? At first, most of them were remnants that had been thrown out of the churches, or who had left the churches in obedience to the command, or simply because they knew that this wasn't right what was being taught there, and so they were scattered into all the world. It reminds us a little bit of at the beginning of the church age, when there was great persecution in Jerusalem and in Judea, and the true believers were scattered. They were scattered, and that worked for God's program of getting the gospel to begin to go out into all the world. They were scattered up into Asia and into Egypt and so on. And here again, the true believers that were thrown out of the churches or knew they had to get out there, as they were being separated from the tares, the weeds that were left there, they became the beginning of that 6100 day period when a great many people are still being saved. They were scattered among the nations and dispersed through all the countries. Yet, thus saith the Lord Jehovah, verse 13, at the end of 40 years will I gather the Egyptians from the people whither they were scattered, and I will bring again the captivity of Egypt, and will cause them to return into the land of Pathros, into the land of their habitation, and they shall be there a base kingdom. It shall be the basest of the kingdoms, neither shall it exalt itself any more above the nations, for I will diminish them, and they shall no more rule over the nations. Now, I read all of those three verses in one breath, because when God talks about, I will return the captivity, normally in the Bible, when you see that phrase concerning any nation, Moab or Ammon or whatever it is, I will return the captivity, it is a phrase that is pointing to the fact there will be some who will become saved, who will become saved when all is said and done. And just like there is this remnant that is being saved today, and some of them came out of the churches, and others have just come out of the nations, but they have been scattered all through the world, and now they are being saved. But in this context, that's why I read three verses in a row, the returning of the captivity is not to salvation. Why? Because look at it. I will return unto the land of Pathros. Now, Pathros was a city in Egypt. I will return you to Egypt. And Egypt is where we came out of before we were saved. In other words, we're back in Egypt, into the land of habitation, and they shall be there a base kingdom. And a base kingdom means a low, 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 low kingdom, the very lowest possible kingdom I will make them. In other words, there's no glory, no blessing, nothing that we can be thankful for in this returning of the captivity of Egypt. Now, it's to the land of their habitation and to the that is, it's really emphasizing to Pathros, and so that has to do with where it began. Where did Israel first begin from? Well, we've already seen that. I am the Lord thy God that has brought thee out of the land of Egypt. But let's look at another verse. Look at Ezekiel 16. Look at Ezekiel 16. And there we read, and I've never understood this, really, why God put this in, but now I'm beginning to understand it a little bit better. Ezekiel chapter 16, beginning in verse 1. Again, the word of Jehovah came unto me, saying, Son of man, cause Jerusalem to know her abominations, and say, Thus saith the Lord Jehovah unto Jerusalem. Now, Jerusalem, again, is a name for the churches, for it was typified, because it typified the kingdom of God. Thus saith the Lord Jehovah unto Jerusalem, Thy birth and thy nativity is of the land of Canaan. Thy father was an Amorite, and thy mother a Hittite. Now, Canaanites, Amorites, Hittites were all wicked nations that knew not God. They were all idol worshippers. In other words, God is saying, you all have a common beginning. Your churches, you all began as wicked people and as a wicked body. And that's exactly correct, of course, because we all started out with the loss of our spiritual life, our life in Christ, in Adam already, and by nature we are both in body and soul, in rebellion against God, until he saves us. Now, but then he develops this. As for thy nativity, verse 4 of Ezekiel 16, as for thy nativity, in the day that thou wast born, thy navel was not cut, neither wast thou washed in water to supple thee. Thou wast not salted at all, nor swaddled at all. None I pitied thee to do any of these unto thee, to have compassion upon thee. But thou wast cast out in the open field to the loathing of thy person in the day that thou wast born. In other words, you were a dirty, rotten shame right from the beginning, right from the beginning. And when I pass, and then it goes on to say how God took this terrible, terrible picture of an unwanted baby that's thrown out into the field and is to the loathing of all flesh. And this is the one that God says, I'm going to save you. And he goes on to describe that. But here we find in Ezekiel 29 where God is saying, you're going to return to your origins. And that's right here to Ezekiel chapter 16, verses 1 through 5. You are again going to be a loathing to all flesh. You're going to be, and as a matter of fact, that's the final shame that comes upon everybody who's unsaved. And that will be the final evidence of having returned to the place of your origin. And now he's using language in Ezekiel 29. He's saying that you will be the basest of the kingdoms, the lowest of the kingdoms. And we know from Revelation 9, where God typifies the churches that are in the day of judgment as being used of Satan as to have a sting of a scorpion and so on, but they have the authority to hurt in that sense, but they rule over nobody. They rule over nobody insofar as what they... You see, I guess what I'm trying to say here real quickly is that when we have the truth, that truth rules over the world, over everybody. When we have the truth, we don't... It's not because of anything intrinsic within us, but it's the fact that we are ambassadors of Christ. We're carrying the truth, and we rule over them. And when you don't have the truth, when you have your own wrong gospel altogether, which the churches have, you that's not an authority over... They claim authority, they have their memberships and so on, but in actuality, that does not really that's not the truth that rules over them as what it should be. Okay, and so let's go back to Ezekiel 29, and there we read, I will cause them to return, in verse 14, into the land of Pathros, into the land of their habitation, and there they shall be a base kingdom. It shall be the basest of the kingdoms, neither shall it exalt itself any more above the nations, for I will diminish them. Now, how's he going to diminish them? And they've already been diminished because all the true believers have come out. They were also a part of this, remember, of this Egypt, and they have come out. They have been diminished, that they should no more rule over the nations, and it shall be no more the confidence of the house of Israel, which bringeth their iniquity to remembrance, when they shall look after them, but they shall know that I am the Lord Jehovah. Now, I just read that verse real quickly, and you say, well, yeah, what? That's that makes sense. That makes sense. Their iniquity will be brought to remembrance. But let's think about this a minute. This is a very big verse. This is a very big verse. I will bring their iniquity to remembrance. When will the churches, everybody in the churches, have their iniquity brought to remembrance? Is it now being brought to their remembrance? Well, we're trying, but they're not listening. They're not hearing. They're not hearing at all. When will they listen? When they shall look after them. After who? After the true believers, as they are being raptured. Now, you know, it's hard to imagine that God put all this information in this one verse, because in this one verse, these are big doctrines, that they would see the true believers being raptured, and this would be an enormous judgment against them. They would be condemned by this. The whole battle of Armageddon and all of the language of the Bible that speaks about in relationship to that are all contained in this particular verse. And but this is the way it will be on that day of the rapture. And then it goes, and they shall know that I am Jehovah God, or the Lord Jehovah. Now, in our next study, we're going to pick up the last few verses of this chapter, and then we'll look elsewhere for some more information about Egypt. But it's a very, very curious piece of information that we have here, where God is employing Nebuchadnezzar, representing Satan, to work on his behalf, and is making a deal with him. He's making a payment to him, and that's what we have to develop next time. You can maybe get ahead of me and study this, but this chapter is really a very helpful chapter, again, in seeing the total loss of the church, the total bankruptcy of the church, the basest of the kingdoms, the lowest of the low. And because I've cut you down, I've diminished you, I've taken all of the true believers out of you, and you are nothing. You are nothing. And this is one way amongst many ways throughout the Bible. God is underscoring this.